The Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Advertising Corporation and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found in his Washington Times Communities column, Forbidden Single Talk.
It's time now for The Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. Now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but you wonder, what kind of government would the God of the universe prefer to have us have here on Earth? Or more specifically, in the United States of America? Would he want to see us live under a pure democracy? Or a republic? Or what's supposed to be a democratic republic? Or wouldn't God prefer a theocracy where he is the sole ruler? Well, yes, my friend, actually, he would prefer to rule, but only, and this is so important, this is very important, but only if he really is the ruler, not some nutcase human who claims to be following God, or a president who evidently thinks he's God. When some mere man steps in the place of God, the real God sees that as quite dangerous. God does not believe in human dictatorships. Now, America is not yet a dictatorship, not for another 5 minutes or so, but we are well on the way. Technically, we are becoming more of an oligarchy, but that distinction is almost hair-splitting. Two of the most controversial Supreme Court decisions were announced last week. When you bet that I would talk about it, I don't think it was a difficult bet for you. Both are about same-sex marriage. Both raise a valid question that transcends marriage. Should the courts be deciding these cases at all? First, in a 5-4 decision, a portion, not all, but a portion of the Federal Defense of Marriage Act, otherwise known as DOMA, was overturned. And yet, well, they're both controversial, but perhaps the handling of Proposition 8 displayed a much different kind of response. They chose not to decide that case based upon merits, but rather a legal technicality. The governors of the state of California, first Arnold Schwarzenegger, later Jerry Brown, refused to argue an appeal when a lower court overturned the new law. Instead, private citizen supporters of Prop 8 sought appeal. Therefore, the challenge to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals judgment in Hollingworth versus Perry and the challenge to the lower court ruling by U.S. District Court Judge Walker were both deemed as invalid. Chief Justice Roberts wrote the majority opinion. These are such precious words, I just have to read them. We have never before upheld the standing of a private party to defend the constitutionality of a state statute when state officials have chosen not to. We decline to do so for the first time here. Translation: all it takes to overturn a democratically created law is for one plaintiff to complain, one judge to overturn the law, and one state governor to refuse to defend the will of the people on appeal. I don't know what they're paying our Supreme Court justices to come up with these genius rulings, but whatever the amount, you gotta believe me, it's too much. Here to help us make sense of all this legal mumbo-jumbo, a real, actual, honest-to-goodness attorney, Matt Simone. But Matt's real claim to fame is not as an attorney. Of course, his real claim to fame is as a regular co-host of the Bob Siegel Show. Matt, welcome back to our program.
Thanks a lot, Bob. It's good to be here. Well, Bob, that was pretty energetic, you know.
Well, that's about the best I can do. If I didn't get some energy and put it in a productive outlet, I'd go out of my mind over this.
Well, you know what? So I guess I know where we're going to start our topic today, and it's going to be on the Supreme Court regarding the same-sex marriage. You know, Bob, for all the time I've listened to you and I've known you, you really do have a way of making the obvious obvious. Well, for the last 30 years or so, when I've been practicing law, what I've been trying to do is make difficult and hard things understandable to people.
Which is kind of like making the obvious obvious.
Yes. And so we are going to try and give it a shot today and see if I could make some sense of what is taking place.
Well, maybe you'll make some sense out of people understanding what took place. I don't think you'll be able to make the guys that made the decision sound like they have any sense.
No, no, I can't help that. All I can do is take the material they give me and run with that. So here's where we're going to sort of start. There was an issue that was present in both cases that had a huge impact on one of them, and that was the Prop 8 case. And in my opinion, should have had a major factor in the other case. And it is a procedural issue, and it is called the doctrine of standing. Now, what we're going to do is we're going to do a little lesson in law, so you'll have to bear with me here for a little bit. Standing is a constitutional question that is based upon Article 3 of the United States Constitution, which actually confines or actually limits the judicial power of federal courts to decide actual cases or actual controversies.
Well, I like that so far. Anything that limits the courts on anything, I'm with you so far.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Well, good. So we're going to continue with that. So let me try to explain it simply as to what standing is. And so we're going to regress a little bit here, and I'm going to ask you guys a question. And the question is, when you were underage, did you ever try to get into a bar or a nightclub when you knew you weren't supposed to get in?
I haven't been that bad, but I have snuck candy into movie theaters. And I don't mean when I was a kid. I mean, I still do that.
Well, unfortunately, I got saved way later in life, and I had tried to attempt to get into places I was not supposed to when they had age limits. So standing is like trying to get into a nightclub or a bar. So before you can get through the door, what happens is you have to fulfill certain basic requirements. Well, one of the things you have to be is you have to be over 21 years of age. You have to have proper attire, and it should not look or be apparent that you're already drunk or disorderly. Well, the next thing that happens is this: to determine whether these requirements are actually met, what do we have at the door, Bob?
A security guard or
a bouncer? Yeah. You know, the guy that looks threatening, you know, the guy that's supposed to, you know, intimidate you and make sure.
I have a good friend that worked as a bouncer years ago. Nicest guy in the world, but built like a bouncer.
Yeah. And he looks at
definitely the guy that speaks softly and carries the big stick. Definitely fits that profile.
Yeah. You just want to make sure that the guy you never crossed.
Well, that's right.
That bouncer is the guy who's looking for some evidence. So what's he looking for? So he's looking for like a driver's license, or he's looking at your general demeanor or your actual clothes. Well, actually, when we go into a court of law, the courts have similar rules. In order for you to be heard or even have a chance of being heard, you have to meet a host of requirements. Like, for example, if you're represented by an attorney, would you believe it? Your attorney actually has to be a member of a bar. But if you're
not the kind of bar where you drink and get bounced out of. You mean that other kind of bar.
That's the kind of other bar where we do a lot of practicing at. You know,
yeah, they do all the bragging at the other bar after. That was a wonderful case.
That's exactly it. And then, you know, you have to do other certain requirements that the court has you do. For example, hand in briefs and motions, and they have to be timely. And then what happens is you have to be the right person to raise the legal issues. And there actually has to be a controversy or a conflict between the parties. Now, this is the most important thing you guys have to understand. Standing requires that we need the right people and we need a controversy. So the reason we have standing is, so courts will only spend their time on cases where there's this actual dispute between the parties, and it has nothing to do about the ultimate merits of the case, nothing to do with the substantive claims. The fact of the matter is we have to get past standing first. So the essence of standing is that no person is entitled to question the constitutionality of a statute unless one has a legally protectable and intangible interest at stake in the litigation and an actual controversy in a real case, a specific disagreement between two parties that can be resolved by a court deciding between them. Now, why did I go into all that detail? Is because I believe when the rulings happen on these two cases, there may have been a little bit of a misunderstanding as to the interpretation of standing by the courts.
Okay, and now my understanding of how it applied was in California, the governors would not argue for what the people had done, which was changing the California Constitution to define marriages between a man and a woman. The governors didn't agree with that, and the judges are saying since the governors or the attorney general, one or the other would have been okay, didn't volunteer to argue this, we're not going to hear it. Is that
Well, that is sort of correct. That's exactly it. So the question became then that when in Prop 8, when the governor or the attorney general didn't proceed with the case, could somebody else step in their shoes?
Okay, so here's my question, Matt.
Sure.
And I'm glad you're here that I can ask this. With DOMA, the Obama administration wouldn't argue the case. So why didn't they treat DOMA the same way? Unless the answer is in the fact that different judges ruled differently. I did notice that a couple of the judges that wouldn't hear the California case voted the dissent on the DOMA case. Is that the answer to that? Because it seems glaringly inconsistent how they handled those two cases.
Okay, so let's get right into that DOMA case and let's start look at some of the details in regard to that and see if we can fix this conundrum that Bob has at this particular time.
Conundrum is the nicest thing we could say about it, Matt.
I know. Okay, so the first case that we're going to deal with is the DOMA case, and it was Windsor versus the United States. And this particular case was the court was weighing in whether the Federal Defense of Marriage Act, DOMA, prevented same-sex couples who were married and recognized by their home state if they it precluded them from receiving hundreds of benefits available to other married couples under federal law. Now, we're going to do a little bit of history because this addresses almost what Bob is talking about. Well, the Federal Defense of Marriage Act, DOMA, was signed by President Bill Clinton in 1996. Congress had enacted discrete statutes to regulate the meaning of marriage in order to further federal policy. Simply, same-sex couples were not given access to the same benefits as heterosexual couples. And that's why DOMA was being disputed at this time. Now, the interesting thing that Bob brought up is during the Obama administration, the Justice Department initially defended DOMA in the courts, despite the administration's desire to repeal it.
Oh, they did. Okay, so they initially, is that the technicality where they finally agreed to hear it?
Yes.
That they initially
so what happened?
But they weren't defending it by the time it reached, they defended it in the appeal process, but not by the time it reached the Supreme Court,
right.
Correct?
Right, so the Justice Department changed course in early 2011. The finding that the law, now this was the Justice Department, was finding that the law was unconstitutional and declining to defend it any longer. So instead of
this
waiting
is
for,
Eric Holder.
This is Eric Holder. Yeah. So instead
he knows so much about what's just and legal. This man just wrote the book on legal honesty, consistency.
Well, the interesting thing about the case was this. So the Justice Department all of a sudden carte blanche says, you know what? We really don't want to defend this. So what we're going to do is we think it's unconstitutional. So we're dropping it. The funny thing is that when you go through the opinion of the majority, they started to criticize the Obama administration writing. They said this failure to defend the constitutionality of an act of Congress based on a constitutional theory not yet established in judicial discussions had created a peculiar dilemma. In other words, what they're saying, hey, you guys, it's your responsibility to do this on behalf of the people.
Well,
you swore.
Why don't they tell Perry, or yeah. Not Perry, but Schwarzenegger and Brown? Why didn't they tell them that they should have done the same thing?
Because we had another option, Bob, and that is where the court screwed up in that case. But let's continue with this DOMA matter. So what happened here, instead of the Department of Justice defending our constitutional rights, what happened is the House Republicans had to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars of our money to defend this thing. So here is the interesting thing about the case that I need you to know right off the top is this. In this Windsor versus the United States, the plaintiff and the government actually agreed entirely on the results of the lawsuit. Okay, so get this straight right from the very beginning. Is what did I tell you about standing? You had to have the right parties and you had to have an actual dispute. Well, they agreed. Not only did they agree in the first court, in the district court, they agreed in the appellate court.
Well, then it's not a dispute. Am I crazy? Am I missing something?
No, Bob, you are actually
to have a
ding,
dispute,
ding, 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 ding.
To have a dispute, don't you have to actually dispute something?
Right. So Windsor won below, and so her injury was cured. And so at the time they brought the case to the Supreme Court, there was no dispute.
So then why is the Supreme Court even listening to them anymore at that point?
Okay, let's find out. So the ruling that Bob told us about, the Supreme Court ruled 5-4, striking down a portion of the Defense of Marriage
Act. Yeah, now let's be clear on which portion was stricken and which portion still remains.
Okay, the part that was stricken was if there was a conflict between the federal DOMA and the state, then that part was stricken.
Federal money that could be used in certain cases.
So basically, if you were in a state like California or New York where this came out of, where there was some same-sex marriage and it was allowed, you could be not denied federal benefits.
But wasn't this particular case a marriage that had been done in Canada? And then they crossed, and it wasn't even state to state.
Yeah, but it was brought
in. Why are we obligated to go along with something they do in Canada, of all places?
But it was brought in New York, and somewhere along the line, they thought they had standing, the right to bring this particular
matter. I always thought New York was a little too close to Canada.
Okay, so DOMA, they said a portion of it was unconstitutional as a deprivation of equal liberty of persons that is protected by the Fifth Amendment. We'll get on to that a little bit. So why was it rejected by the majority? Well, this is what they said. DOMA's principal effect is to identify and make unequal a subset of state-sanctioned marries. It contrives to deprive some couples married under laws of their states, but not others, of both rights and responsibilities, creating two contradictory marriage regimes within the same state. So what they're saying is that there was not equal protection under the law because heterosexuals and same-sex marriage people were being treated differently.
Okay, now here's my question. The other part of DOMA, the part that didn't get stricken, was that a state like Texas that doesn't recognize marriage between two gay people doesn't have to recognize it if they come from a state like California that now does recognize it. But wouldn't what Kennedy wrote in the majority opinion apply to that, too, that we have two separate views of marriage? I mean, couldn't one now argue that that ought to strike down the rest of DOMA? And yet they didn't strike down the rest
of DOMA. Well, as we get through the process here and we take a look at it, there is certain things that this decision became problematic. But I'll tell you my opinion in a little bit here and why the court didn't even have to decide this or why the court went where they did. So let's start this. Let's take a look at something because I always find this interesting when we have Supreme Court cases. Well, the first one is how do these guys vote? Okay, so we had five people were in favor.
Is it eeny, meeny, miny, mo? I'm not seeing much more logic than that.
Well, Bob, it was something much more simple. It was ideological lines. So we had Ginsburg, Kagan, Breyer, Sotomayor as the liberal justice who you'd think would want to strike this down along with the administration. And then we had our swing vote, Mr. Kennedy.
Mr. Kennedy.
Yes, Justice Kennedy. Now, on the other side of it, we had the conservative justices. We had Thomas, Scalia, Alito, and Roberts. So let's get back to what the majority's opinion was. And you're going to take a look at this thing and you're just going to start scratching your head and wondering where this equal protection argument comes into. But let's see what happens. So Justice Anthony Kennedy said this. The court's majority ruled that the power of individual state in defining marriage is of central relevance, and the decision to grant same-sex couples the right to marry is of immense import. The court ruled, used its historic and essential authority to defend the marital relation in this way. Its role and its power in making decisions enhance the recognition, dignity, and protection of the class in their own community.
Okay, now wait a minute. Which way did Kennedy vote on the California one? Did he also vote majority or did he vote dissent?
He was dissent on that. So he's consistent.
He's consistent.
Yeah,
was he voting? So is he saying that had they argued California on the merits, he might have gone ahead and supported Proposition 8?
Well, let's think about that a little wait later because I think
why
when
does
we
Kennedy
get in,
half the time make sense and the other half talk? I mean, this is like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, this guy.
Well, you know what I mean? He's motivated by, I guess for lack of a better word, by the issue, by the circumstances.
Well, at least
of the case.
He thinks for himself and doesn't just vote on party lines.
Yeah, and he does. And
unfortunately,
he really does
it's what he thinks that's sometimes the problem.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so he went on to say that DOMA demonstrated purpose. So this is why he didn't like it. This is really one of the reasons why he ruled this way. He said DOMA's demonstrated purpose is to ensure that if any state decides to recognize same-sex marriages, the unions will be treated as a second-class marriage for the purposes of federal law. So the truth was, is in this case, everything that motivated him in regard to this was all about that he didn't like the simple fact of the matter that the federal government was doing something that actually was inconsistent with what was going on in the states. And he wanted to almost move to the point where you would think it's a protective class in regard to same-sex marriages. That's where it seems like the slippery slope.
Okay, let me see if I'm grasping this, and I guess I'm talking on behalf of a lot of people in the audience who want to make sure they're grasping it too. So Kennedy is saying, we got to, whatever my own feelings are about same-sex marriage, we got to protect the state.
Yeah.
So if there's a state that says they grant same-sex marriage, he doesn't want the federal government denying them money because that interferes with state rights. But then by that same consistency, if there was a state that didn't recognize gay marriage, they don't have to recognize it if somebody moves in for another. So he is being consistent.
He's been very,
did I get that correct?
Yeah, he's been very, very consistent. And so, but you've got to keep thinking of the wording that he's using. He's not making a whole lot of legal arguments. He's saying that the law was created as a stigma upon all who entered into same-sex relationships. So, I mean, he's getting to this whole idea that, you know, these people are being treated different, and he didn't like it.
So he's protecting the state rights, but then between the lines, he's throwing in his personal view about gay marriage at the same time?
Exactly. And he goes on to say
he's having his cake and eating it, too.
Exactly. And I mean, it seems like it worked in this particular case. So he also said the power of the Constitution grants, it also restrains. And he said this, though Congress has great authority to design laws to fit its own conception of sound national policy, it cannot deny the liberty protected by due process clause of the Fifth Amendment. So he's doing exactly what you're talking about, Bob. He's saying, okay, the states are here, the federal's there, but you know, if we have people that are actually in a state and the state has chosen to allow the same-sex marriage, we're not going to let Congress come on and run roughshod over that state so that these people will be treated differently, okay, under the equal protection or the due process clause of the Fifth Amendment. Now, the due process clause of the Fifth Amendment says that the government cannot take away your life, your property, or freedom without certain steps that give you a fair chance. And he's saying that these people were not given a fair chance, and that's why the majority ruled the way they did.
Yeah, I'm following everything other than I'm still mystified that somebody coming from Canada and moving here, we have to suddenly honor what Canada did.
Well,
and I like Canada. I've been to British Columbia. It's beautiful there. The trout fishing is wonderful there, but
well,
I don't know.
I have never been to Canada, and the thing I can't tell you, Bob, is that maybe they got remarried in New York. All I know. I don't know what happened.
Maybe I heard that wrong. Yeah. I thought they said somewhere in the Canada
side. It may
have.
It may very well be. But somewhere along the line.
And I thought they moved to New York. Maybe I do have that wrong. I guess we could look that up afterwards.
We sure will. Now, so we've got a bit of an idea of what happened in regard to the majority side on this thing. So what they're saying is that if the states decide this, the authority to make this decision regarding same-sex marriage should be centered in the state, and the federal government should not be imposing anything that will cause somebody not to have due process of the law. Now comes the dissent. Okay, now the dissent comes in. And we'll spend a little bit of time.
Scalia wrote the dissent, didn't
Well,
he?
Actually, Roberts did.
Oh,
and
okay.
Then there was an additional dissent by Scalia.
Okay.
And so here's what Roberts initially said. He said, without more convincing evidence that DOMA's principal purpose was to codify malice. So in everything that was being portrayed by the majority was that, you know, we were just basically hate mongers and the Congress just wanted to suppress people, things along that. He's saying, hey, I don't see that. And so I'm not going to rule that way, but he said he believed Congress acted constitutionally when it passed legislation to retain the definition of marriage. At that point, it was adopted by every state in our nation and every nation in the world. So in 1996, what DOMA said in regard to the definition of marriage was consistent throughout the whole United States and pretty much the rest of the
world. Okay, well, Matt, now Roberts is confusing me because now Roberts is making sense.
Yes.
So what you're saying is Roberts wrote his dissent based on the merits of the case. That means Roberts did not dissent based on the fact that DOMA wasn't being defended by the administration. And is that only because, as you said earlier, the administration initially defended and in the lower courts? Why isn't he perturbed that they're not there in the higher courts when that was such an issue to him? I read already what he's over there, what he said about California. I don't.
So why
is he willing to argue on the merit of the case here, but not on the merit of the case there? Neither one of them were represented by their government.
And that's a good question, Bob. And I guess when we come back, we'll find out.
Always leave them wanting more. Okay, you're listening to Matt Simone and Bob Siegel. We'll be right back.
Bob now at 888-344-1170. That's toll free, 888-344-1170. Bob may have strong opinions, but he also likes to hear what you have to say.
Some more beautiful.
This is Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated, license number 480539, W&S Electric.
Do your kids ask you questions about God and the Bible that you can't answer? Sign yourself or your child up for a class with lots of solid answers at educateforlife.org before someone else gives them the wrong answers. Are you tired of not knowing what to say when your friends and family ask you questions about God and the Bible? Get equipped by signing up for a class at educateforlife.org. When someone asks you, "How do you know the Bible's true?" do you say something like, "I just know it is"? If you're tired of giving lame answers, sign up for a class at educateforlife.org. When someone says that God isn't real, wouldn't it be fun to prove that He is? Quickly. Like a verbal ninja? By using science and logic. Sign up for a class at educateforlife.org with Christian apologetics teacher Kevin Conover, and you'll learn how to do that. Educateforlife.org. If you enjoy listening to The Bob Siegel Show, check out Bob's weekly column for Washington Times Communities. Bob is also a regular contributor for San Diego Rostra and San Diego Newsroom. And don't forget his website, www.bobsiegel.net, S-I-E-G-E-L, bobsiegel.net. Here, you can download past radio shows, read Bob's many articles about Christianity, and get information about Bob's books. That's www.bobsiegel.net. We now return to the Bob Siegel Show.
I'm here with my good friend and rotating co-host, attorney, and we need a few attorneys to navigate us through life these days, Matt Simone. He's talking about the Supreme Court rulings, DOMA and Prop 8, and the technicality that they use in Prop 8 called standing. I liked his analogy early on when he compared it to going for a bar, and I didn't want to say anything at that point because it would have gotten on a tangent, but I had to observe that with an ID being required, it's harder to get into a bar today than to vote. You can go vote without an ID and not prove that you are a citizen of the country, but you can't get into a bar.
I guess as long as you look like you're over 21, it doesn't matter.
Oh,
right?
My gosh. It's harder to get into Disneyland than to get into our country.
So where we left off was Bob asked some good questions. So for the sake of time, what I'm going to do, because I do want to get the Prop 8, what I'm going to do is I'm going to sort of give you a bit of an overview of what's going on in regard to Justice Scalia, because he also wrote a dissent. Now, he said something very interesting when he was sitting on the bench, and it says, in the majority's telling, he said, this story is black and white. Hate your neighbor or come along with us. The truth is more complex. It's hard to admit that one's political opponents are not monsters, especially in a struggle like this one.
Well, those are good words.
And those were excellent words.
So why didn't he apply those words to the California ones instead of coming up with that idiotic ruling?
And I'll tell you why. So here we go. So in this particular thing, Scalia did not believe in the DOMA case that there was standing at all. That's the bottom line. He basically used this word and he started chastising the majority. He said this case is about power in several respects. It's about the power of our people to govern themselves and the power of this court to pronounce law. The majority, however, believes it's emphatically the providence and duty of the judicial department, the Supreme Court, to say what the law is. Now, Scalia is basically taking the position of this. They're standing. You have to have adequate parties, but you have a conflict. So as we talked about before, Windsor had actually won at every level and everybody agreed. And therefore, this should not have been heard by the Supreme Court, and because there was a standing issue because there was absolutely no dispute. But what we're seeing happen, predicated on the justices that voted the way they did, it brings the question, Bob, in your last article you did. Is this about enforcement of the Constitution or interpretation of the Constitution?
Yeah, and it's just amazing that people feel that you have to go to law school and study histories and centuries of case law, and nowhere in the Constitution does it even say that the Supreme Court is there to interpret the Constitution. They're enforcing it.
That's exactly correct. And so in this case, so the MO behind Scalia is this, is that you have to understand, if you've read enough of his writings and stuff, you'll understand this. He wants to restrict the amount of people that actually get to the court. I mean, he really wants to restrict.
Which is
a real good thing. So his take is that both parties agreed to the judgment in the district court in New York, and the suit should have never came here.
So he's saying DOMA should have been overturned a long time ago then, right?
Well, he basically said they should not have heard the issue of DOMA. DOMA was a moot point. Exactly the way they ruled on Prop 8 is the way they should have ruled on DOMA in this case, because there were people to fight, but there was no issue or
Okay, so by both parties, he means that Obama, who doesn't like DOMA and is being sued by the people that also don't like DOMA, but in reality, the Congress that passed DOMA, they would still have a fight. It's just that they're not being represented.
Right, but the simple fact of the matter, it's even something simpler than that. There is absolutely no dispute. There's no dispute. So if there's no redress, if there's no way that the court can give you some satisfaction, then the court can't rule on it.
Then why bring it to us?
Yeah, then why bring it to us? So as far as Scalia is concerned, this particular case should never have been brought, should never have been heard, just like Prop 8 supposedly should not have been heard because of the issue of standing, but not because of the parties didn't belong, but because there was actually no dispute.
Well, that would explain why Scalia would rule in a similar way with California, but Roberts seems to be being two-faced with this, because Roberts wasn't telling DOMA that they had no right to even bring this to the court.
Right. He was
saying DOMA's very similar to Prop 8 in the sense that in one case the president and in the other case the governor would not defend it.
Well, Roberts was also making the point of this is, really, are we really here to go against the elected officials, the Congress of the United States, in regard to when they make law? Are we supposed to do that? So once again, is it enforcement or is it interpretation?
But couldn't he then look at California and say, are we here to go against the people who make laws in another way that California's constitution allows for, which is a ballot measure?
Okay.
And changing the constitution and amending it. That's the process for amending.
Well, let me give you a hint. I was trying to hold this off. That's why I'm sort of like backing off when Bob asked me some of the questions, because I'm trying to...
Trying to accelerate where Mac wants to have that dramatic moment and bring it in at the end.
I'm trying to reel them in back here. Okay, let me just get the cat out of the bag.
Okay.
It has seemed. Okay, now, Bob, last time I was on here, you know, it seemed like I might have been a homer for the Chief Justice here. And, you know, my views are changing drastically.
I'm glad, Matt. Okay. Welcome to this.
I'm away from the dark side
now. I got to say, I've heard so many nice things about Roberts. His peculiar charm seems to elude me.
Well, in this particular case, as the Chief Justice, what we're finding out more, which seems to be the consistent thing about him, is this. Once again, Bob, is this. He would rather rule on procedural things than get to the substantive issues. So that's why he ruled differently.
Well,
on California.
It's not that I believe the Supreme Court should be meddling in the substantive issues, but since that's what they're doing, if he doesn't want to do it, why did he join the Supreme Court?
Well, somebody nominated him and he took the office. It's a pretty good gig. You know, it's a lifetime.
Good pay, good benefits. It's lifetime. Yeah.
But the thing is so that's the cat's out of the bag. He really does like to get rid of these cases. And if he can get away on a procedural thing, he will.
Yeah, good one. So the will of the people's overturned because he wants to get rid of a case.
Right. So let's go right
into... Good one, Roberts.
So let's go right into Prop 8. Okay, so Prop 8, Hollingsworth versus Perry. The issue is whether California voters discriminated against gay people when they voted to ban same-sex marriage. California voters added the ban to the state's constitution in 2008 through a ballot initiative that reversed the state Supreme Court's recognition of same-sex marriage earlier that year. The two same-sex couples challenged in federal court, and by the time the justices heard this, the two lower courts had declared it unconstitutional. Once again, it was a 5-4 decision.
And, but these are different 5-4s than one on the the other one.
Now, in this case, this is where the split. Now, before the first time, it was mostly it was the liberals versus what you would call conservatives. But in this one, it was Ginsburg, Kagan, Roberts, Scalia, and Breyer. So three of the original, but we have Roberts and Scalia added. And then, you know, which confused some people was Sotomayor went with the dissent. Alito, Thomas, and Kennedy swung back. So what? When Chief Justice Roberts wrote the majority, he basically came down on the side of, hey, there is absolutely no standing. And this is where we get into the issue. After it left the district court, okay?
After, district court was where Walker ruled.
That's exactly where Walker ruled. What happened is the state of California, okay, through the governor, through the attorney general at that time, decided to drop out. So what they did, they violated their oath of office, which said that they would enforce the Constitution
but
of the United States.
The governors did bring it to Walker.
Yeah,
so
yes,
Schwarzenegger brought it.
Yeah, he brought it there.
I bring it to Walker so he can decide the case.
Right. So they brought it there. The attorney general brought it there. But the problem was, after the decision was made, they wanted no part of it. Okay, so the issue we have is a standing issue, the way the majority dealt with it. So what are the things we're worried about regarding standing? You have to have a party that is supposed to be there that can fight, and you have to have an actual dispute. So in Prop 8, they're saying they did not have parties who were involved or who were had enough of an interest in the case to be actually a party to the case.
Well, then don't these two rulings, DOMA and Prop 8, contradict each other on the standing issue so much that it just proves how ridiculous it is that we're going to the Supreme Court for this kind of guidance at all?
Well, no, not so much, because in the first case, it was the standing issue was predicated on no dispute. This one, they're talking, they said, hey, you're not a party to this action, and that's why. So it's the same standing issue.
Well, they could say no dispute, but it was also true that Obama wasn't arguing it, which wasn't that a pretty direct parallel to Schwarzenegger and Brown?
Well, so that's the argument. I mean, that's one of the discussions
here. You're talking about the way they look at it.
Yeah, that's, you know, so when we're looking looking at this thing, I mean, it works the same way. You know, so in the DOMA case, we had the president and the attorney general not wanting to proceed. And here we have in California, we had the governor and the attorney general also not wanting to proceed.
Okay,
in regard to this.
Now the liberals, the liberal justices who dissented from the California opinion, right. I know that's not because they wanted to support Prop 8. Is that because they didn't want to overrule it on a technicality and they wanted to overrule it based on the merits instead?
Ding, ding, ding. Yes. Now, see, that's why it was so interesting when you take a look at the people and how they ruled. Now, if we go here and we take a look at this, Ginsburg, Kagan, and Breyer were not ready to hear this thing or wanted this thing to go on its merits because they just ruled in DOMA. And what did they say in DOMA? It's all about the state. The state's got the rights. The state's got the interest. The state is the one.
Oh, so they were aware of how two-faced.
Well, they were saying is, hey, I'm going with the procedural argument because we're going to lose. Now, Sotomayor, okay, look at it. She goes, hey, well, maybe we have a shot. And she was willing to take a chance. So that's why you have Thomas now. Now, Thomas is another one of those guys. He was one of somebody who said, hey, let's hear this thing and let's get it out on the table because there is standing. So, I mean, when you take a look at some of the way these people voted, there is some means that are madness if you understand maybe some of what was going on in their own minds.
You know, I wish the people that had drafted that part of the Constitution about the Supreme Court had just stayed home that day of the Constitutional Convention.
Well, unfortunately, Bob, we got a lot of good in that Constitution.
We
so,
did.
You know,
well, the Supreme Court part was fine if we read what the Constitution says about the Supreme Court, not all this junk we've added to it.
So let me just get back to this thing. So what we're looking at now is this. Was there an injured party that was affected, that had a personal and individual interest in this case and the Supreme Court justices said, no, there wasn't. But the question becomes, is it was probably.
Well, there were 7 million injured parties who voted for it.
Well, what about time and money, Bob? I mean, what about time and money? There was a lot of time. There was a lot of money.
Here's another thing. If it didn't have standing, why did they listen to the arguments at all? Okay. Why didn't they just say, you don't have standing, we're not even going to listen to you?
Well, because once it got to the Supreme Court, they have to listen to the arguments, but they can also go through the procedural requirements of getting through the door.
Well, couldn't they say this wasn't allowed to get to us and then save us all that time and money?
Well, the problem was the appellate court, the ninth appellate court, which, okay, it says it all right there. They said that there was standing. Okay. So because they said it was standing.
Well, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals has said a lot of things over the years.
Okay. So where we're at right now is a situation where the majority is basically saying that there is no standing because there is no person who can bring about a good fight in regard
to this. God forbid on this one issue, I agree with the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals more than the Supreme Court.
Well, as far as the standing issue, the reason the Ninth...
I didn't think the Ninth Circuit would ever get anything right.
Well, but the reason the Ninth Circuit got it right was because
they want to see it dealt with on the merits.
Well, maybe that and the simple fact of the matter, they went to the state Supreme Court and they ask them, hey, do they have the authority and standing to proceed? And the state court said, the Supreme Court of the state of California said, yes, they do. And so they said, okay, good, let's go on with it.
You know, to this day, I'm still hearing, even this week, I'm hearing talking heads on TV who are all for same-sex marriage, but they're saying, that's fine. State by state, the states can do what they want. But then they praise the fact that Prop 8 was overturned. So they don't really believe states can do what they want.
No.
They're talking out of both sides of their mouth.
Okay. So now comes Kennedy on the dissent. Now, he's a California native.
Is he?
Oh, yeah. So he...
Now, why shouldn't that surprise us?
Well, in this case, it sort of worked to the good. And what he said was that the majority just had no clue because they did not understand the history and the background of why the initiative process was put together in the state of California. And the short portion of it is this. Here's the short story is this. Hey, somewhere in our history, believe it or not, there were elected officials that were somehow stifling and frustrating the will of the people. Could you believe that, Bob?
I can believe that all over the place.
Okay. So we established an initiative, the proposition portion of our Constitution, actually a California election code, so that in case we had people who were elected who were stifling the people would have an avenue to pass laws
exactly.
and change the Constitution.
So then later on, the court says, well, that avenue to bypass the governors who want to stifle the people, we won't allow that avenue to be argued because only the governor can argue on behalf of the stifled people.
So effectually, that's what happens.
Yeah.
So
Kennedy's still being pretty consistent.
Yeah,
here.
So they had standing in the district court. They had standing in the appellate court. When they got to the Supreme Court, they said there was no standing because the majority did not agree that the people of California had enough of an interest through the proposition to be the person who could actually litigate this case. Well, Kennedy argues totally against that, and he uses history. He goes back through the whole process, and he says, hey, you guys are absolutely clueless. The people, that's the way it was set up. Okay, and so he believed that there should have been standing. So let's capsulate this thing for a second. The DOMA case shouldn't have been heard. It should have just fell for standing reasons. When we got the Prop 8, it should have been heard on its merits. And if it was heard on its merits, my feeling is that it would have been upheld according to the logic that the majority, Kennedy, used in the DOMA case.
Well, maybe it would have been upheld. But on the other hand, the way Roberts voted on the insurance one, who knows what he would have done.
Well,
if he wasn't able to dismiss it as a legal technicality, who knows what he would have done?
Well, but you would think. Okay,
yeah.
So let's give you guys some hope out there.
I was going to ask you that because I have heard people say that if you look between the cracks on this, there is some hope.
Right. So
I'm not quite seeing it, but show us what.
Okay,
it is.
So let's look at some stuff and then we can take a look and see what we may think. So the question is, now can same-sex marriage resume in the Golden State, the state of California? Well, you know,
people are going to argue about that.
Well, maybe. Well, we saw what happened last week. You know, the appellate court basically maybe acted too quickly. Okay. So what they said is, you know, what happens is once there's a Supreme Court ruling, the people that are involved have 25 days to actually ask for a rehearing of it. Now, it's not common and such, but there's that 25 days. So they're almost guilty of when they did the first time when the courts, the proposition was overruled. There
right,
was that little
right.
gap time. Okay. When people are now getting married. So the question becomes, did they act too quickly? And, I don't know the answer to that question, but that is the question. Did they act too quickly, and should they have given more time?
But if there's a disagreement, and I'm assuming that the high majority of Californians who voted for Proposition 8, most of them still agree with that.
Yes.
Some probably changed their minds over the years, but what difference does it make? The courts can enforce this with the law and the police, right? Regardless
well,
of what the policeman individually believes.
Well, here's the next question then. So does a federal appeals court have to overturn Prop 8 before same-sex marriages are allowed? The appellate court lifted the stay but did not invalidate the ban on it. So what happened is they said, okay, you know, move forward, but there was nothing that was actually put forth by the court themselves to say that the ban itself was, or that the proposition itself was invalid.
Well, I thought it kind of went back through time to the district court and Judge Walker, and he did overturn Prop 8.
Okay,
so
well,
isn't that supposed to be the only thing that's left on the books right now?
Unconstitutional, which brings us to another point, Bob. That okay,
another episode of As the Stomach Turns.
Okay, so when the Ninth Court of Appeals decision was vacated, there was no appellate decision in regard to Prop 8. Well, there is a provision in the California Constitution that requires an appellate decision, and there is none that exists. So the question is it the law and is it unconstitutional based on the district court?
So we're being inconsistent with the California Constitution.
Yes.
And of course, there's another little amendment in the California Constitution that says there's no such thing as same-sex marriage. So I'm guessing if they don't care about that part of the Constitution, they won't care about the other part of the Constitution either.
You know, there is just so many things that are going to come up, and this subject is just not over.
What are the conservative activists going to be doing? Are they going to try to take this thing back to the courts somehow?
Well,
what are you hearing?
Well, I think
on
well,
Attorney Roe, what well, are you hearing?
Well, initially they are filing some papers. It seems right now. I think Maybe they'll take a shot on the Supreme Court side. I don't think so. I think they're going to start procedurally working through and taking a look in regard to the California Constitution to see if Prop 8 actually has been overturned, just predicated on the simple fact of one district court judge.
Now, how do you see, is it 37 states that have defined marriage between a man and a woman?
Yes,
close to that, something like that.
Yeah, something like that.
Okay, any effect on those now? I know that the part about those states wasn't overturned in DOMA, but I'm hearing some people argue that it's going to be more difficult for those 37 states to hold on.
Well, that's good now because, okay, so here's some of the other questions. So some people are arguing that it only applied to the two couples who were the original plaintiffs and in the counties in which they were litigated. Okay, so
you can be a gay couple in part of California, but not in all of it, just in the somewhere in the San Joaquin Valley or something like that.
Right. And then there's like I said, Roberts actually in the majority said that since we didn't rule, we're not saying that this really affects any other states. So this ruling was simply a procedure. It was not heard on its merits, and it came down to the simple fact there was no standing, so the court didn't hear it, so we don't know those issues.
So the bottom line is this fun conversation for our country will not be over for a long, long time.
No. The thing that sort of bothers me about both these cases, okay, so now here's Matt's opinion. In regard to this.
Matt, I'll take your opinion against the court's opinion any day of the week.
Okay, so here it is. This is so darn problematic. We have a mechanism in the state of California. It's a democratic process in which the people can be heard and bring it and debate it and openly discuss
it. Instead of the judges being so arrogant that they know what these children people need more than the people themselves do.
Right. And, at first when I came here, I was from Pennsylvania. We didn't have this prop system. But once I got here, I could see the benefit of having it when, you had public officials that you really need to bypass.
If you're going to have a governor like Brown, you need a couple of propositions.
So let me give it to you this way. This is the way I look at what's basically happened here in regard to both these cases to a certain extent is, okay, I'm a dictator. And you know what? I'm a benevolent dictator. So you know what? I think we're going to have an election. And you know what? I'm going to let you people go out there and vote. Just vote your little heads off. Do whatever you want to. Let's just vote. Yeah, we're going to do this democratically. But I'm going to tell you one thing right now. If I don't agree with it, it's not going to happen.
Spoiler alert. Let me tell you ahead of time how the election's going to go. And even if it doesn't go the way I say it did, by the ballots, it's still going to go that way.
That's exactly. Too bad, so sad. So, the two things that I took out of this case is this, that, somebody like you or me basically may have lost our vote altogether in the state of California. And what makes it even worse, Bob, is this, that not only did we lose that vote, but when we vote in a representative, that representative himself may not have a vote, according to the DOMA case.
That's right. That's right. Two branches of our government passed a law. One branch struck down that law, or at least struck down a major portion of that law.
So, that's pretty much where we are in those cases, Bob. I think there is a lot more to be heard. We're going to see a lot of lawyers doing what they do best, and that's argue the minutia. Okay, and maybe we'll get down to some substance in regard to this.
All
whole
right,
thing.
Did you bring some other legal stuff
for
us today?
Sure.
I see a lot of stuff in
my
little portfolio.
Okay, so Bob, let's end with this because I know you will definitely have an opinion on this. So
I have an opinion about everything.
I know. So here's the big question: with all this stuff that's going on with same-sex marriage and stuff, and some states have it and some states don't, and we have federal laws and how they intermesh and stuff. The big question is, Bob, should states get out of the marriage business?
You know, it's interesting because I was a guest on a national radio show about 2 months ago, and it was called Southern Sense. And the fellow that was hosting it, well, it was a man and a woman, libertarians.
Yes.
Now, I have great sympathy for where the libertarians come from. I'm not a libertarian because I don't agree with everything they do. But he was saying, shouldn't the government just get out of this, and shouldn't it all just be up to the church? My response was, yeah, I would agree with that, and that would be wonderful, but reality check, that's not the way it is.
Yeah.
The government should not be in the marriage business, but it is. So if it is, and we're citizens, then we're going to have some kind of say about what they do. Because here's the way people argue this. They say, oh, well, you Christians that were in favor of Proposition 8, you can define marriage any way you want in the church. But out here in the secular world, separation between church and state, you can't impose that on us. I say, fine. But then how do you explain how judges, like a judge in New Jersey, goes and tells a Methodist church that they have to allow a civil union on their property? And he says, and I'm practically quoting him, religious liberty has to be tempered with the greater needs of society. Where on earth did the First Amendment go with that ruling?
Yeah, well, you know, I think the libertarian view pretty much is that, you know, it's contractual. They're just saying it's a contract. But you know what? I think the state actually does have a unique interest in marriage, and it has to do with the procreative potential for people and how kids are affected. And I think that's one of the prime reasons the state still needs to stay in it.
And you know what's interesting is we're not going to know till about 20 years how kids are affected by this, because we haven't had time to see people grow up. And it's going to be interesting. Oh, the seeds we plant today, what will we harvest tomorrow? Well, Matt, the next time you come on my show, I'm hearing all kinds of stuff about all kinds of illegal things that happened in the 2012 presidential election, such as far more votes coming in than the amount of people registered. Was Obama really reelected as president of the United States, or is that something he and Eric Holder cooked up? I don't have a conclusion, but I'd love for you to look into it, study it. That's your assignment, Mr. Phelps, if you should choose to take it. Next time you come on our show, I'd like to talk about that.
Okay, Bob. We'll see what
Matt,
we can do.
It is always a pleasure. We will see you next week, everybody, on the Bob Siegel Show.
The Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.